From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, travelers who have had some paranormal moments. Looking forward to that. Prayers, by the way, for a very prolific author and Coast to Coast guest, Brad Steiger. Brad is seriously ill, under hospice care right now. Just say a prayer for him. Here's what's happening. A Puerto Rican Air National Guard military aircraft with nine people on board crashed, burst into flames shortly after takeoff from a Georgia airport. Apparently no survivors. The C-130 Hercules plane was being flown into retirement when it crashed on a highway just before 11:30 a.m., shortly after takeoff from the Savannah Hilton Head International Airport. A Southwest Airlines flight bound for Newark made an emergency landing because of a broken passenger window as the beleaguered airline downplayed the situation as a maintenance issue. Flight number 957, which took off from Chicago's Midway Airport, was diverted to Cleveland 2 hours after taking off. It landed safely at the Cleveland Hopkins International Airport. No injuries there. Well, the week-long E. coli outbreak tied to romaine lettuce has now killed one person in California and expanded to half of the United States now. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said 23 more cases reported since Friday, bringing the total to 121. Our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin, with us. Jeff, this thing's getting worse.
The statistics are coming in. There's like a kind of a delay of like a week to 2 weeks. So, you know, we're just getting the final numbers are just starting to be pulled together. But at least for the time being, you know, the lettuce has been so far identified coming from, Yuma in Arizona.
I have not looked in a store yet, but have they pulled romaine lettuce from the shelves?
No, they're not pulling it. We're just, you know, the CDC advice is to make sure that it's not from Yuma. And if you're not sure to, not purchase or consume, this product. But I would say, especially if you have people that are high-risk people, you know, if you're pregnant or if you have problems, you know, with your ability to defend your body type situation, you want to be real careful and, stay away from this product until, you know, there's clearance. But, you know, if there are any questions, certainly, you know, you can always call your local health department to get clarification.
Jeff, could this E. coli outbreak be done intentionally? Is that conceivable?
It is possible that, you know, the contaminants could be done intentionally. You know, there have been cases in the past. But let's hope that this is not becoming a source of intentional contamination.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Here's an amazing story. Plants inspire other plants to grow through a series of underground signals, according to a new study. I mean, this is amazing. Researchers found that corn seedlings exchange messages with nearby plants via chemical signals fired into the soil from their roots. These potent secretions tell the seedlings whether they're other neighbors or relatives or strangers and help them direct their growth accordingly. That's amazing. Next time you eat veggies, realize they may be alive too, talking and everything else. Fresh fears have been raised over the role of mobile phones in brain cancer after new evidence has revealed rates of malignant type of tumors have doubled in the last two decades. Charities and scientists have called the government to heed longstanding warnings about the dangers of radiation after fresh analysis revealed a more alarming trend in cancers than previously thought. There are some scientists who disagree with the study. The U.S. government is looking into reports that three Americans detained in North Korea have been relocated from a labor camp to a hotel ahead of a planned summit between President Donald Trump and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, so maybe they're going to let them go. Sunspots are becoming scarce, very scarce. So far this year, The sun has been blank almost 60% of the time, with whole weeks going by without any sunspots at all. Let's check in with the expert, Mitch Batras. Mitch, what's going on with the sun, my friend?
Well, hello, George. It's not unusual that we're in that time of solar minimum. This solar cycle, the 11-year cycle, started in 2008. This cycle is expected to end between 2019-2020. So we're way on the downside. So that's not too unusual. However, there are cycles within cycles that we've talked about so often. This happens to be an extended cycle. Some believe it could be as much as a 5,000-year cycle. In fact, my connections at NASA are expecting cycle 25, which would start in 2019, say, about the middle. Cycle 25 may have no sunspots. And to understand that is that, remember, the sun has a magnetic field as well.
Mm-hmm.
Its magnetic field flips every 11 years. That's why we have, generally speaking, about 11-year cycle. This period is a weakening magnetic field. I don't think it's a coincidence that Earth's magnetic field is weakening five times faster than expected. So what does all this mean? I think my study and my research, really over 20 years now, I believe we are heading into a magnetic flip.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow or next week, but I think some people who are listening to me and you right now will witness it. In other words, I think it will happen in about 50 years.
And when it does, what happens to us?
You know, nobody knows for sure. No one has experienced that. We're not going to be flung off the earth. It's not going to be like that. However, there's a lot of migrant animals, and I believe partly us too, except we've been dumbed down pretty much as humans, are associated with our magnetic grid. When that grid flips, I think some believe that there will be some extinctions of animals, not an occurrence where it's a material flip. In other words, the Earth is not going to roll over. It's magnetic. But already airlines already recalibrating their instruments. Used to be like every 6 months. Now it's more like every 6 weeks.
And GPS could go crazy too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, Mitch's website, scienceofcycles.com. Thank you, Mitch. Always good to hear your reports. Cambridge Analytica, that political consultancy company at the center of the Facebook data sharing scandal, is shutting down. The firm was accused of improperly obtaining personal information on behalf of political clients, and according to Facebook, data of about 87 million of its members was harvested by a quiz app and then passed on to the political consultancy. They are shutting down. Up next, we're going to be talking about billions lost. Hillary Gamm joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. For the next couple hours, we are going to be talking about the American tech crisis and what it has done to us, how many billions of dollars we've lost, how many millions of jobs have we lost. The book is called Billions Lost by Hillary Gamm. And for more than 25 years, Hillary has been at the front lines of America's high-tech industry. She has amassed a wide-sweeping professional portfolio at virtually all levels of the tech industry hierarchy, from field work to middle management to executive leadership. Hillary has managed IT departments, projects, application development, and client services. She's consulted for large international corporate IT programs, has deployed applications in more than 40 countries, managed multilingual offshore teams as well, and has put together this work, Billions Lost. Hillary, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this.
Hi, sir. How are you? I am too. Thanks for having me.
And this is a pen name. So this is not your, Hillary Gamm is not your real name, right?
It is not my real name.
If you told us your real name, would we know who you are? It feels like, what's my line?
I don't know. I heard there's a lot of people listening in tonight. So
there are.
You might be.
There are. And why are you using a pen name?
Because I felt that the books merits needed to stand on their own, and the book's not really about me or my career or really about anything to do with me. It's about technology, and I really want people to hear the message of what's going on in the country with technology and really have the book stand on the merits of what's happening with technology and have it not be about me.
The name of the book is called Billions Lost. At what point did this start, where we started really losing our edge?
Started back in the 1990s. If you remember, back in the 1990s, the world was in a tizzy over the upcoming Y2K.
Oh, they sure were.
Do you remember that?
I remember that. I used to listen to this program with our predecessor who just passed away, Art Bell, who would pound away at this potential problem. There were a lot of people who were scared to death, Hillary, about that.
There were. You know, people really were crazy. They thought that the banks would stop working and they wouldn't be able to get out money. They thought the gas pumps wouldn't be able to pump gas. Were concerned that the electric grid was going to go down. They wouldn't be able to call 911. And there would just be basic mayhem and chaos across the country. And because of that mass hysteria, we cracked the door open to allow in a foreign labor force. And that's really changed America today to an extent that most Americans don't realize has really happened. And that's really the reason I wrote the book.
So that opened the door. Y2K.
It absolutely did. If you remember at the time when people were so concerned about Y2K, Silicon Valley existed. We had some Silicon Valley huge tech companies. And they were on TV and on the radio and created this idea, this myth, that there weren't enough Americans in technology who could address the problem. And we needed to make sure we brought in labor from foreign lands. Well, at the same time that that speech was going on repeatedly across the airwaves of the United States, one of our large tech giants was being sued. They were being sued for not paying their contractors or providing, not necessarily paying, for not providing their contractors benefits. So in addition to getting their hourly wage, they weren't being given stock options, they weren't allowed to go to the Christmas party, and they waged a lawsuit. And a result of that lawsuit was that American companies across the U.S. stopped using local tech labor. And we no longer in the U.S. today hire technology workers for more than 12 months for fear of being sued. So the corporations decided, right, we don't need to use American technology labor. We can go outside the country. And that's exactly and precisely what happened.
Were they justified in the Y2 scare at the time?
You know, I think that it's fair to say that people weren't really sure how widespread the issue was going to be. But, you know, the clock struck 2000 and absolutely nothing happened, right? It was status quo, business as usual. So in retrospect, it seems like the hype was probably overhyped. But better to be safe than sorry, and good that everything was taken care of before we had any issues for the new year.
Let's talk about the power of high tech. And when you say a lot of it went overseas, how much is a lot?
It's tremendous. You know, it's interesting because when I started writing the book, you know, my assumptions were, you know, some portion of technology has left the U.S., but it is huge. I mean, I would say the percentages, the number of employees, and the number, the amount of work, the type of work, it's tremendous. It affects every industry. And that's the reason I wrote the book, so that Americans would be aware of really what's happened. So when we think about technology, a lot of us just think about, you know, the tech companies out of Silicon Valley. They think of the social media companies. They think of the search engines. They think of the FANG stocks, right? And in reality, technology is in every hand, in every person's home, in every business, and it is driving everything we do, our decisions, our ability to market, our ability to sell. It's part of every industry. So when we think about technology labor, we're not just talking about technology labor for high-tech companies. We're talking about the technology labor that drives every single industry in the United States. So So when we think about the various industries, we think about our banks, we think about our credit card companies, we think about our insurance companies, we think about our health care providers, we think about our grocery stores. Every single one of these industries has a majority of their tech labor working offshore in other lands.
I just had that story before you came on, Hillary, that the data service company that took information from Facebook from 87 million users is shutting down now. And how widespread are issues like that? I bet it's huge.
Huge. And it's huge. I mean, you know, data is the new oil, right? So data means nothing when it's just data. But when it's refined, it's super powerful, and it will propel our economy, you know, to new heights. And so data is the new oil. So, you know, the number of, you know, we can, in the case of Facebook and Cambridge Analytica, that data wasn't hacked. So I don't know if we would call that data, you know, legally obtained, because I think there was some, you know, question as to how it was obtained.
Right. And people feel there was an invasion of privacy.
Right. They feel that they were taken advantage of, and they feel that they weren't dealt with honestly. So, and they were surprised that the data that they were, that they were using an application and their data was being used, and without their clear understanding of what that meant from a personal perspective.
In your book, Billions Lost, are you recommending how to bring back some of this technology?
Yes, I am. Yes. At the end of the book, The Roadmap to Change, I come up with lots of suggestions on how we can really turn the tide and bring technology back to the U.S., bring the investment back to the U.S., hire a lot more workers here in the U.S. And improve things for the country and secure our national security, because our national security is paramount. Secure our personal data, our government data, and enable the country to succeed economically and also maintain our security.
I had read where with some of these many new smartphones and mobile devices that are being made overseas in other countries, that they are sneaking and spying type information and chips inside the phones. Is this real?
Yeah. You know, the best example of spyware is the Kaspersky situation.
Explain that.
So Kaspersky is a Moscow-based technology company that created this antivirus software. And it was installed on machines, laptops, desktops that were being sold across the U.S. So what would happen is every single machine would have this Kaspersky software installed with the idea that it was protecting that user from getting viruses, when in fact it was spyware. So what it would do is cull out every single subject that contained words that were like top secret,
mm-hmm,
or important or
classified.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh.
And so, in fact, it was spyware installed on computers sold to Americans across the country.
Brilliant. Now, who was behind it? Beyond the Russian company, there must have been some politicals behind this, right? The KGB, the ex-KGB people and stuff like that?
Well, I think whenever you talk about the technology ramifications, where you're talking about China, or you're talking about the Soviet Union, or you're talking about any of the other countries that are producing not only software but hardware that are in copious amounts across the U.S., you have to question if their governments are not behind or are not the driving factor to spying, industrial espionage, the stealing of intellectual property, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
When we come back, Hillary, I want to ask you about individuals and their information that's being stolen. One of the arguments against it is, what are they going to do with all this stuff? There's so many people come on, I don't have to worry, but I'm not sure that's the case. So we're going to come back in a moment with Hillary Gamm. She's the author of Billions Lost, The American Tech Crisis, and the Roadmap to Change. Next. Well, I'm getting emails from lots of folks about the Las Vegas stage show event. Yep, it's going to be June 9th at the Silverton Casino. Full information at coasttocoastam.com in our carousel, or click events at the top of the homepage. It'll take you straight there, and then you can click the event. We're doing it with our partners, KXNT, our affiliate in Las Vegas. A great series of guests, meet and greet following the show. Just going to have a great time in Las Vegas. And then spinning over to Asheville, North Carolina, August 25th, we will have a live stage show at the Diana Wortham Theater. And you can get full information by going either to that website, which is dwtheater.com, theater being spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E, dwtheater.com, or go to coasttocoastam.com and click the top of the events. It'll take you straight to the Asheville event. And welcome back. We'll take your calls next hour. Hillary Gamm with us, her book, Billions Lost. Hillary, individuals may say, look, with millions of people out there, so if my data is stolen and in the batch, nobody's ever going to do anything with it. They're not going to use it. What do we say about that?
Good question. I would say, I don't necessarily know if I agree with that perspective.
Right.
I think that our data about ourselves, our families, our homes, our financial status, our education is ours, and it's our property, and we own it, and we really shouldn't be giving it out to whomever to give them access to aggregate it and figure out marketing trends or what have you. I think that today the situation that we have with data is that Americans are freely giving their data away. And I think when they're doing that, what they're not realizing is that, you know, that's their own personal property to some extent. And in addition to giving it away, you know, we're putting data in all different kinds of repositories that are hackable. And I think that's also could be somewhat dangerous to the population. So both things concern me very much.
Hillary, tell me about the dark web. Exactly what is it?
Ooh, well, you know, what happens is when we go onto all these various applications, we put our information in, it's there and it's available. And technology, I think when you hear folks talk about it, they think of all the great aspects of technology, and they have kind of a utopian idea of technology. But in fact, you know, technology can be used for things that aren't necessarily great. So when we think about our financial information, banking information or loan information, or we're doing trading and those kinds of things, the dark web gives access to those who would want to infiltrate, let's say, our financial information and hold our finances hostage, or they'd want to hijack an account and take the money from us. The dark web relates to any nefarious things that go on with the technology that we use every day.
One of the things that has changed the face of the planet instantly, social media. I mean, I remember the days in the old news days, you had to rely on radio or television for a breaking news story, and newspapers were way behind, of course, and but, you know, it was instant, but you had to be listening. You had to be watching. Nowadays, with social media and smartphones, you instantly get bulletins, breaking news. It's everywhere. Has that helped or hurt us in society?
Another fantastic question. So when I think about technology, right, technology has just changed so rapidly, so much more than every other medium prior to it. And that has to do with the fact that when you're thinking of technology, all the different things are changing simultaneously. They're all progressing simultaneously. So it creates this exponential growth. So it's unlike any other industry, right? Because in order to get the smartphone to work really well, there's the actual smartphone technology. There's the hardware. There's the software that sits on it. But then there's also the infrastructure, you know, that whole Wi-Fi, which wasn't available 20 years
right.
ago. We're able to use our smartphone, you know, driving in a car and getting directions or tapping into the World Wide Web to look something up. So everything changes simultaneously, and it creates exponential growth. And that's why we've seen these rapid changes with technology over previous technologies. The good news is that radio is still here. I'm talking on the radio, and we're on the radio, and people are listening to us. Television, again, like you said, the next iteration, people could see first in black and white and then in color. And today, with our phones, we have immediate, just as you said, news feeds, entertainment, and communication. It enables markets to react rapidly. We can do trade and trade currencies instantaneously. It affects our global trade, it affects our domestic trade, it affects how we communicate. But what I think is so important, and no one's really talking about this, is so many of the issues that we have with social media today is really, when you think about it, it's kind of in its infancy. Well, when the radio first came out, I'm not sure the FCC was really regulating the radio. When television first came out, I know for a fact there weren't regulations immediately put in place. But American citizens, as a population, as a society, we determined, you know, that we needed to have some kind of regulations to kind of get ahead of the medium and make it basically family-friendly. So there wasn't vulgar language or scenes or things that would be disturbing on the TV. That same kind of idea and approach hasn't yet come into fruition for social media. And that's what makes it so dangerous. Because I think what's happening is we have this idea of free speech, that everything's allowed. But in reality, you know, we've had free speech since the inception of our country. But that doesn't necessarily mean that everything's allowed in every medium, because it's reaching children, disturbing images that could be harmful to our national security and to the health and well-being of our citizens. There's no control. And what concerns me the most is that in every other industry where there's regulations, you know, the government, our leaders, you know, come up with a framework or a paradigm to enable our society to succeed with that new technology or with that industry. But here with social media, we haven't quite gotten there yet. People are seeing that there's, and the leaders, you know, in tech are seeing that there's a lot of things that aren't so great. And they're just trying to catch up and figure out, how do we ensure that the technology benefits everyone in a positive way and doesn't hurt those in our society and doesn't hurt the American way? That's critical, right? And that's, you know, hopefully something that'll be coming soon.
I got to tell you, the technology is just amazing, though. I mean, when people are able to send instantly a text message to someone, or even a video or a picture of whatever they're seeing, you can send that to the recipient, and it just beams through the airwaves, and it's there within seconds. I find this, Hillary, to be just amazing.
It really is, isn't it? And it's incredible, and it's so powerful.
I mean, do you imagine how many text messages do you think are being sent worldwide at any given time?
Oh, I think trillions.
I do, too. And they all make it to where they're going.
Right.
I mean, I've never, other than if you dialed the wrong number in your phone or something, I've never gotten a text message from someone by mistake. Have you?
No, that's, you're absolutely on the money on that one.
It's just unbelievable technology. And I guess it's all dealing primarily through what, satellites?
Yeah, and the, you know, the internet, which we laid out, you know, and again, developed in the 80s, I mean, that all made this all possible. Right, the ability to create a unique identifier for every handheld device, every machine, and be able to get it to the right place, like you said, it's incredible.
Where will our youth be in 10, 20 years when they grow up? Because I have seen little ones, and I mean little ones, 5, 6 years old, playing games with smartphones, and they are better than we are as adults. What are they going to be like when they get older?
That's right. You know, the kids of today don't get the joke about asking for directions, right, between a husband and wife.
That's right.
They don't want to ask for directions because they have a GPS.
They don't need it. That's right.
They can't even comprehend what life is like without a smartphone. This is the first generation growing up with technology in their hands.
Now they can't do calculations in their head or things that we could. they have to rely on a built-in calculator to do things.
That's, you know, it's true. You know, I think inherently human beings tend to take the easy way out, right? You know, inherently we're lazy and we do things the easiest way possible, the path of least resistance. So where generations past had to memorize a phone number, you know, you think of, you know, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, people would do it the alphanumeric memorization to memorize a phone number. You know, nowadays no one memorizes a phone number. If you have to call somebody, you just, if they're in your contact list, you just hit their name and you're talking to them a few seconds later or leaving them a message. So that whole paradigm where we're memorizing numbers or calculating a mortgage, you know, all these things that all the generations previously had to learn how to do, now it's all at our fingertips, right, with the technology, and there's an app for everything, you know.
It is amazing. It really is. Yet, you say a lot of this has gone overseas, went out the door, and we've lost billions of doing that. Why did we, even when you mentioned during Y2K, why did we flee overseas? Was it because it was cheaper?
Right, exactly. So the reason that jobs have gone offshore outside the U.S. is because the tech labor outside the U.S. is less expensive. And because of technology, people are able to work remotely. But unfortunately, it's a true double standard because, as Silicon Valley said, oh, we want to bring all our workers back in-house so they can be more productive. And every other American industry followed suit. So we were trending towards remote workforces and enabling people with disabilities and working parents and women to be in the technology field and thrive. We kind of threw them out with the bathwater when we went overseas to hire tech labor. And, you know, the double standard is, you know, all these companies continue to use remote tech labor that they source from foreign lands, and yet they're not hiring Americans to do those jobs. And that's the primary reason I wrote the book, so people understand that it really affects our economy. And there's a number of reasons why that happens, right? So the history behind it was back in the 70s and 80s, there were huge American companies that worked as auditors. And they were in the businesses, and they understood the processes. And they were the ones who began to do the technology consulting around tax time.
Mm-hmm.
And that grew into an industry which we called outsourcing, where we were taking those technology jobs. Technology jobs in the United States, you know, in the days of, you know, when IBM was giant, technology jobs were just like any other jobs where you'd have a manager and people working for that manager.
That's
and they were
right.
Doing the work, right? They knew the business. And they were building technology and making that company more successful and providing competitive advantage. That's not the case today. Today, you have companies that outsource their technology organization, not just the help desk, but the testing, the developing, and even our high-tech companies have locations all over the globe where they're hiring and creating these tech labor forces that are called captive. So, and again, people in the United States don't even realize that. So because there's low barriers to entry, because you have remote workforces and you have the internet and you're able to send files across time zones and across the ocean to everyone you want to send it to in the globe, you can hire these really cheap technology labor forces anywhere outside the U.S. with no ramifications, and they can do the work. And you're saving oodles of money. You're not having to pay them benefits. You're not having to train them. You're not having to keep them happy. And they're a lot less expensive. And American companies are responsible to their shareholders. And so you can't really fault them for looking for the least cost labor available. But ultimately, it has dire effects for the American economy because we're not only losing the wages, but we're losing all the jobs that go along with those tech jobs. So the people that do the hiring, like the recruiters, the people that do the benefits, you know, the marketing people, all the jobs that go along with those technology jobs are also lost, and the revenue's lost. And the bulk of my book, what I talk about that's most important, is that we're losing the ability to educate and employ and maintain a tech labor force here in the United States.
It is really withering away, isn't it?
Right, in the digital age. This is we live in the digital age. We live in the era of technology. So when we think back to how America became great, we think of, you know, first we think of the trains that went from east to west. Then we think of the automotive industry. You know, we had plastics, we had chemicals, all these industries, you know, sending men to space. We didn't send out for engineers to a foreign land when we had to put a man on the moon. In that great race to space, we educated our engineers in aerospace, and we got a man on the moon. And in technology, we need to remember that if we don't take that same kind of idea moving forward in this space, we're going to put our lives and the American way of life at risk.
Try calling your credit card company after hours. You get somebody in a different country who's talking to you, wanting your Social Security number. It's really uncomfortable.
It really is. And when you think about the companies that are employing labor from these foreign lands, they're in a business setting, and they're talking to people who sometimes don't even understand the fundamentals of their business, right? People are coding things. They don't even understand how it actually works here in the United States. And so I'm not sure that, you know, because there's a smaller hourly wage that we're paying for these foreign technology workers, their output, their productivity can't match an American employee.
Now let's talk about some of the downsides of this incredible technology. Back to text messaging, for example. You watch a couple come into dinner, sitting at a table. One of the first things they do is they'll put their cell phones on top of the table as opposed to in your purse or in your shirt pocket, and you don't look at it until after dinner. You got to make that a rule, but they put it right there on the table, and then they start texting away. I sometimes have always wondered, and you look at a couple at a dinner table doing that, they're both sending text messages, if they're texting each other because they don't know how to talk.
Well, you know, isn't that one of the things that we're so, again, one of the things I talk about the book is teenage labor. We can talk about that a little later in the show, but, right, it's unbelievable. So we have this society now of people who don't necessarily know how to interact. We have children who can't really know how to grow up. We have adults who don't know how to have, you know, appropriate discourse. It's, you know, everything's texting, you know, no eye contact, no handshakes. You know, that whole idea of how we did business before is really changing in the United States and our interpersonal relationships. Do you know that there's all kinds of articles and books being written about how it's so difficult, the introduction of technology is affecting dating in the U.S. and actually globally?
That's right. Absolutely. We set up a dating service called ParanormalDate.com, Hillary, just to combat stuff like that for people who are into the strange and the unusual. And they're happy.
That's great.
They're happy.
It's really incredible when you think about, and, you know, I think you had a segment on the news before I came on, and you were talking about radiation. And so It's important that we don't keep, and I just give a warning, couple quick health tips for those listeners who are on tonight. Couple quick things. You don't want to ever have your cell phone on and then on your body, right, because it's emitting radiation. The Wi-Fi towers people have in their homes, they're just like little Wi-Fi. They're just like the little towers that are out, you know.
Yeah, beacons for that.
Yeah.
My sister died of a brain tumor several years ago, and her cell phone was with her all the time. And she would talk to her daughters all the time on the left-hand side of her head, and that's exactly where the tumor was. I've always suspected that that phone had everything to do with that. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take phone calls, so you have questions or share your own stories with us about high tech next.